Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello, it's your old pal Wilson, and we're bringing you the 12 Days of Richmas. Yeah, we went there. I'm sorry about that. These are the 12 most listened to episodes of 2023. Enjoy.
Insane in the Membrane.
Hello and welcome to your favourite podcast, Insane in the Membrane, with me, Rich Wilson. And today I am joined by the wonderful Judith Owen. Hello.
Hello, lovely to meet you, Rich.
Lovely to meet you too. And we were just discussing the time difference because you are in New Orleans, is that right?
I'm actually even worse than that. I'm in Santa Monica, so it's even earlier.
Oh,
so it's 8 a.m. Oh, I shouldn't say that. So let me just say, it's even earlier than you can imagine. Yeah.
But you look and sound fantastic. This is what we were just discussing. It's like, I don't look or sound like this in the morning. This is incredible.
Well, you know, I have two giant Labradors called Aretha and Franklin, because
nice.
She's my idol. And yeah, and those two are literally staring into my face at 6 a.m. So I have very little chance of ever really sleeping properly ever again. And I love it because I used to be the kind of person that woke up or had problems waking up just because I was, you know, scared of the day, shall we say, like many of us understand.
Yeah.
These dogs, of course, they make me happy to welcome every single day. They are joy incarnate. So I'm just, honestly, Rich, I'm trying to be a chocolate Labrador. That's what I'm trying to be right now for you.
Oh, we could all be that, couldn't we? A bit more chocolate Labrador.
Yes.
Yeah, but it takes effort. I mean, Labradors don't seem to, they just get on with it, whereas we have to make more of an effort to be so.
Well, I watch them and in the morning, you know, and every dog owner, dog lover is here listening to this and going, oh yeah. But they literally spring out of bed because, of course, they sleep with my husband and I, who are teetering on the edges of the bed, holding on for dear life because they're huge. And their behavior is as if they've just woken up from like a 6-year coma and they've realized that they're alive again and they have their life back. And then they look at me as if they haven't seen me for 10 years. And it's like, it's you, it's life. Isn't it incredible? And so I'm trying desperately as a kind of, you know, naturally Welsh depressive to understand that, to be more in the moment and to emulate that kind of behavior. I am a Labrador in training.
Well,
that's what I hope to be.
Someone was telling me recently.
When I grow up.
I think, do you know what? It's a great thing to aspire to be. Like you say, that positivity, that energy. Someone was telling me the other day that dogs don't have a sense of time. So that's why if you leave the room and you come back in and they're like, oh my God, like you just said, it's you.
Oh my God.
My God, yeah. Where have you been?
It's the great, I mean, there is, your significant other will never look at you the way that your dog will look at you as if you're back. Oh my God, I love you. They will never, ever, you know, I mean, it's not possible, but that's why those of us who are slightly flawed, to have dogs in our lives, of course, is the most extraordinary and marvellous thing. Every dog lover and owner knows this. It is a true gift. That's why we go through the unbearable loss every, if you're lucky, 13 years,
yes.
Because life with a dog actually makes you, I believe, a better human being. It really does, because it teaches you so much in being able to be gentle and endearing and empathic and loving. It allows you to show your most vulnerable side, your most loving side. And we rarely get to do that without feeling either shame or vulnerability and fear that someone's going to hurt us. So yeah. I think it's an extraordinary gift that they give us.
I think you're right, and having that and realizing that it's actually, like you say, precious that we exist in the first place. And we are, as you said, we all suffer with, you know, mental health issues on some level somewhere at some point in our lives. And to try and, I do this myself, so I try and focus on the positives and try and go, okay, yeah, all right, you're a bit skint, or you haven't got this, you haven't got that, but look what you do have. Look what you do have.
And that's, it's difficult to do. You're so right. My husband, when I was years ago, and I've always struggled with depression, and it's in my family very deeply. And of course, like I said, I joke about it, but it's very Welsh. I mean, it's like, you know, there is the melancholy there, melancholia. And when I met my husband, he described me as being the glass half broken. This is one of the best lines anybody has used to describe me, except the truth is the flip side of that darkness, and that's what comes out in music and what has come out in as I've got healthier and healthier, and is that I'm actually a very alive, vital person.
Yeah.
Who has, you know, there? It's like, you know, it's like that the two sides of a coin. It's just there is that, you know, and I have to say, there's not a funny person I've ever met in my life, and I mean a professionally funny person that I've ever met in my life who isn't the darkest son of a bitch you'll ever meet, ever. Yeah. And I think that's very telling, is that need to find light and find joy, because inherently there is that darkness in there. So I think the hardest thing any of us can ever learn to do, which dogs do so easily, is to be present and in the moment. Yeah. I really do.
Yeah, which is, and I learned that through reading Ruby Wax's books. Was that I remember reading, I can't remember which one it was specifically, but it was that when you're having a moment, just go, right, hang on a minute, just sit there and feel the chair, feel the desk that you're sat in front of, or feel the thing, like being, start to recognize what's around and actually feel the things. I'm like, oh my god, that blew my mind, totally blew my mind.
Yeah, it's the exercise in mindfulness, which she writes about, which is being so present that you could actually feel your human presence and weight.
Yeah, that was it.
Within the planet, you know, within the place that you exist, is an extraordinary thing. And we all get that moment where you suddenly look up and think, oh, my God. You know, I remember, honestly, I was here in Santa Monica for years when I came over to be with my husband. I'm always going back and forth between America and London. But I remember the day when I woke up as if from a Rip Van Winkle sleep, where I suddenly realized that I was standing on the beach in Santa Monica, surrounded by the most beautiful surroundings imaginable. I mean, it was extraordinary. And it had taken me, I'd say, probably 4 or 5 years, because my brain was so functioning so badly and was chemically really? So bad that I couldn't absorb any of the beauty, because, as you know, you can't feel joy in any shape or form when you are that dark inside. And that's the truth, you know, that's really it, isn't it? It's the fact of, if it's like, you know, looking in the mirror with an eating disorder and thinking, I'm fat, you know, at 90, you know, whatever, like when you're skeletal, it's that thing where if your brain is telling you that life is dreadful, and that you're in pain, you can't see anything beautiful. You can't absorb anything positive.
Yeah.
And you know, having gone, you know, done a show or created a show with Ruby years past, losing it, that was the point of it all. As two people who had struggles with their own versions of depression, but who had the greatest desire in the world to, you know, rip the band-aid off the tumor, which is the truth, because that's what most of us do, is self-medicate or do things that cover it up to a point but don't actually deal with it. And to try and take away that stigma, which God knows I grew up with, and the shame and the secrets.
Yes.
The secrets constantly. I'm honestly, Rich, I look at myself now as a very mentally healthy human being, and that's and a lot of that, and most of that is thanks to music, and thanks to the thing that I do. And I'm so far from the person who I was then. It's really extraordinary. I'm so grateful.
It's funny as well with, you know, people have this assumption that because your husband Ruby, tremendously successful people. Yeah, and there's this assumption like, well, you're successful, you're living the dream, so how could you have any of these issues? And like, it just goes to show you that on a mental, on a subconscious level, we're all the same and we all have these struggles. It doesn't matter what's going on or what we've achieved.
Correct.
There's still that darkness that just, and for no reason, it's like you say, you know, like you've got a tremendously successful music career and you still have, and you have those, you had those moments where you were like, oh, what's the point?
It doesn't matter what you have. It's sort of like, you know, whether you look at like somebody like Anthony Bourdain or any,
exactly,
you know, people
that,
who take their lives, people who struggle with this constantly, people who are addicted to, addicted. Let's just put that under there, because it can be anything. It can be drugs, it can be booze, it can be shopping, it can be sex, it's whatever. You can put that name on it. But having success means nothing. And that's success on any level, you know, for people from the outside that think you're doing so well. What have you got to be depressed about? That's not what depression is. It's a really malevolent little disease that, like I said, if you imagine your brain as your computer, the computer is running everything. You know, it's telling you how you see life.
Yeah.
And so what you have, what you've achieved, the things around you, your beautiful family, your loving partner, whatever it might be, it doesn't come through. It does not
come
through at all.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean.
And it's extraordinary, because then there goes the guilt that comes with it when people are thinking, what the hell have you got to be down about? How dare you? You know, you have everything, and then you feel like you have to make excuses for yourself and apologize. Now, that's a big word for me, by the way.
Oh, really?
Yeah, apologizing for who you are this has changed me so greatly. That this, of all things, you know, we were talking earlier about my energy first thing in the morning. I mean, I'm used to being on, you know, having to get up at insane hours and sing on the radio or sing in situations where I shouldn't be able to. But, you know, I'm just so grateful to be able to do any of this with the like the history that I've had. But I had this incredible moment, and I do want to share this with you because it actually is so important to me. I did this during COVID. By the way, wasn't it amazing during COVID where everybody felt like us?
I felt like,
oh my God, everybody's in my gang now. Hey, it's the Judith Owen party. I could run for office. Everybody had anxiety and stress, you know, post-traumatic stress disorder. Everybody was struggling with it. And
that was it. That was the great leveler where you saw, you know, people like yourselves and people, you know, like the Backstreet Boys, and people, we'd locked in and everyone's in the same position. Like, it doesn't matter. So it didn't, suddenly you start to realize like, oh, it doesn't matter where you're at on this imagined success level, ladder, you're all locked in and you're all
And it's the great, imagine the joy. I don't mean it that way. It sounds so tossy of me, but I remember having a conversation in, you know, because I live mostly in New Orleans, it's just too hot to be there right now, but I'm down there and I'm talking to my friend Helen Gillais, this incredible cellist who also suffers from the darkness, the black dog, and we're talking, we're having a FaceTime because of course we can't actually walk up the street and meet each other at all because we're shut down. And she said, is it not incredible that everybody now understands the way that we've been feeling, you and I, our entire lives. And right now, I'm feeling like I'm ahead of the game because I've spent my life learning how to deal with this. I'm not joking. Honestly, Rich, we felt like we were like, we've got this. We have this because this is what we do every single day. Yeah. We wake up every single day trying to work out how to deal with our anxiety. And now the rest of the world was feeling it too. And that's a bit of a harsh thing to say, but there was a joy and an irony in there for us. And during that time, again, to quote my husband, I decided that I would rather, again, stick forks in my own eyes than record another deep, meaningful, emotionally exposing Judith Owen penned songs album. I all I wanted, and this is the flip in life. This is the flip to me. All I wanted, and I think all we did want, and all we still want, is joy and a sense of relief and release.
Yes.
Entertainment that makes you feel hopeful, distracts you, elevates you, gives you escapism, because it's not just COVID, it's everything that has shifted all around us, all the time. And it feels, you know, we're in this magical world and this extraordinary heavenly place called Earth, and yet every single day we're seeing information, absorbing information, which of our own doing is the most depressing stuff that any of us have ever faced, I believe, in a real basis, you know, in a real way, not just on a chemical basis, but really. And so I had a very strong memory, Rich, of when I was a kid.
Yeah.
And my home was a brilliantly musical one, because my father was an opera singer at Covent Garden. So this was like the light of my life, and me and my sisters. But my mother was terribly depressed. I mean, it had not been diagnosed, of course, because it was just too shameful to even go to somebody and ask for help. And it was very much just, you know, just really push through it. Come on.
That's it.
You know, we've been through tough times. We come from tough people. It's just, you know, we're in London now. We've left Wales. But it's like, you got to tough this out, because that's the way you get through things. Well, you don't. You don't.
No.
And she didn't. And it was a home that was both elevated and alive with music, constantly music. And it was a very sad, there was a sadness always in there inherently, because of the darkness that was around her at all times, that of course we were absorbing.
Yeah, and this thing, and you wouldn't have been aware of it at the time, like, because you were a kid.
That's it. It seemed like that was normal, and little did I know, nature nurture, but I had that too. And also I was absorbing her pain and feeling responsible for her, and we were parenting her.
Mm.
But the real relief from it, and the upside, the light here, is that my dad had this collection of remarkable songs, remarkable 45s that he'd collected when he was a kid.
Oh, amazing.
Of these extraordinary African-American women at the piano, killers at the piano, the most joy-filled, alive, vital, thrilling artists, women like who are not known anymore at all. Nellie Lutcher, Julia Lee, Mary Lou Williams, I mean, Dinah Washington, of course, still known, Blossom Dearie, but, you know, little-known cult figures. And I remember him, the first time he played this song called Fine Brown Frame, and I was just bouncing off the walls, dancing, you know, with joy, because it was spectacular in its pure, unadulterated joy and humour.
Yeah.
And anyway, so long story short, that was a lifeline for my family, for my sister and me and my dad. Those songs became like a rock, you know, they were an anchor, and they were the distraction, escapism that we needed. But that's what music is, as we know. And the classical made me cry and let me release those feelings. And this made me feel like that's who I wanted to be. And that's what I was fighting to become, in spite of what was going on in my home. Well, my mother lost the battle, of course, with depression.
Oh, sorry.
And that sent my whole family off the rails. Certainly I went off the rails. And
as I say, how would you cope with that?
It's interesting how many people I meet who have been within their families or their partners or their parents have dealt with and lived through suicide. And I don't think you ever get over it, but you certainly do live with it, and if you're really very fortunate, learn by it. Mm. Because although it has taken me my life to become well again, and that is the truth. And again, really? That thanks to music.
Yeah.
But the greatest gift my mother gave to me, and she was a really remarkable woman, you'll see how this all ties together, because she was this big band lover, jazz lover too, all these songs my dad was playing, the rhythm and blues, the jazz and blues, these incredible women from the 40s and 50s. Well, my mother was this incredible dancer.
Oh, wow.
And I had this image, you know, she was, again, so alive and so destroyed forever, as long as I the little time that I knew her, of course. But what she taught me was who not to become. Right. Because I knew from a very early age that I had what she had. I had a, you know, low-grade clinical depression. Right, I had an anxiety disorder, very bad anxiety disorder. And I did what most people do, or children of, often. And I think men suffer from it worse. There are the statistics that say that men really do suffer, you know, children of suicide. The boys actually suffer worse and are more likely to do the same thing. But I think children often feel like they don't deserve to be around when their parents have gone. And also, what does that mean about them if their parents leave them, you know, and want to leave them? Well, and then there's the shame and the guilt of not having been able to save her, because she was my responsibility. I was her parent, and why couldn't I save her? So the knee-jerk feeling was, I should do the same. You know, I don't deserve to have a joyful life. I must suffer.
Right.
Not kill myself, but I must suffer.
Right. Punish
and then
yourself.
Exactly, and punish myself because I'm a terrible person. And then the next thing that comes after that is, if I don't do something really serious, and if I don't change things radically, I will be the same person.
Mm.
That was, that's the fork in the road was, I better do something. I better start on this, the job that she didn't get to do, that she was unfortunate not to have all the tools, not to have those, the help. But if I don't do something, I can see where this is going. And that truly was the biggest gift that she gave me. And I learned something very, very, very important all these years later, when it's COVID and I don't want to do another Deep and Meaningful, because that's, you know, 13 albums later, and it's been amazing, and I've been pouring my heart out and my experiences and connecting and not wanting to do that. I wanted to do something joyful, wanting to do something hopeful that lifts me, that lifts my audience, that is an escape into another time. And to return to that place when I was six and I felt that joy, that changed so much for me. I mean, this sounds like so corny, me saying it this way, but it changed much, because what these women were they were unapologetically themselves. And I love using that phrase, because I think as Brits and just as human beings, and certainly as a woman, you spend an awful lot of time apologizing for who you are, or feeling like you should apologize. And I think men do this as well. Of course you do. Feeling like you should here's the word, you're not enough.
Yes.
Yeah. And the sense that we all have, those of us who appreciate this and have it, is that I am not enough. And the reason for that is you haven't had a parent who's told you you're enough. Because I had this extraordinary experience recently where I met a woman who was so put together here in LA, so beautifully confident, not revolting, you know, not like precocious and terrible and like that horrible LA thing that we all know, but a naturally, divinely at peace with herself confidence that just, that I like to feel that now I have actually achieved without playing at it, without acting, without pretense, like that used to be me, is that was the armor I wore. But genuinely, and I asked her, how have you always been this way? And she said, I was very fortunate. I had this wonderful mother. That was the one that almost killed me when I heard that. I had this wonderful mother who always told me that I was more than enough. And that I could do whatever I put my mind to. And if anybody undermined me or made me feel less or played games, that I should leave and walk away.
Right.
And
right.
I was just sort of like,
yeah.
This was, well, and you can it, do was that. It was, oh no, I just like, you, exactly, thank you, Rich. I was literally like, you could do that,
yeah,
as a kid?
What?
And it turns out you could. If you had, and of course my parents couldn't tell me that because they weren't told that.
No.
They felt like that they had to apologize for themselves the whole time and that they were somehow not enough and hadn't been invited to the sexy party of life. Guess what? There is no party. It's just this. That's what it is. And so here we are all these years later and I meet this woman and I make, and making this record and it's, and it becomes very clear that the key to all of this is feeling like you're enough. I couldn't feel like I was enough. I had a mother who was so flawed and who left and it was clear that I definitely wasn't enough. But the truth is, we're all enough. I mean, I hate to sound like, you know, proselytizing about this stuff, but how interesting, I guess, you know, when you get to, when you get to be a grown-up badass woman, which is what I've always been in you know, this is who I've always really been inside, trying to figure out how to, you know, gestating a badass. When I first heard these women, that was the start of it. That was my love affair. But I think all I ever wanted to be was my authentic, absolute self, and to not apologize for being a bit loud and a bit mouthy and, you know, outspoken and big behind the piano and unafraid and funny and clumsy and stupid and silly and all those things that it takes to be a beautifully flawed human being.
Yeah.
And I made this record, and in the making of this record and in the sort of embracing these women's lives and their music and who they were and their absolute trailblazing fearlessness, I realized that my struggle, my battle was with myself because of that basic belief that I was never enough and therefore deserved to have bad things or things not to work out or to be disappointed in life. And then I end up doing something that is an exercise in self-confidence. It's an actual exercise, particularly in female self-confidence and the horrible word, but empowerment, but you know what I mean by that.
Yeah.
Where I get to be my absolute self and I get to incorporate what my mother taught me, which was to bring in that aspect of, like, you know, in my live show, you know, dancing and entertaining and being an actress, which I was trained to be, and being the musician and the pianist and the band leader, the woman in control. And I am more than enough.
Yeah.
But it, and I think it's about reaching that place in life where you just think, I don't give a flying F.
Yeah.
Am I allowed to swear?
Absolutely.
All right, I'm saying it.
Say
I don't give a flying fuck
That's
what anybody thinks about, thank you, darling, anymore. Just checking.
Nice.
because, you know, at the end of the day, we think we're being judged by everyone around us. We do so much, especially Brits, because
especially,
we think people are judging us. No, they're not. They've got their own bunch of problems that they're dealing with. We judge ourselves. We are our worst judges. And if somebody doesn't like you, that's what this woman told me as well. She said, my mother told me, you won't be liked by everybody and not everyone will like what you do or who you are. And guess what? That doesn't matter. Because all that matters is who the people that do like you and do like what you bring to the plate and do like who you are. That's all that matters.
That's all that matters.
You're not running for president. You don't need to be loved by, you know, you don't need to be Bill Clinton and need to be loved by babies and dogs and men and women and everybody in between. You just don't need to do that.
No.
You just need to find those that get you, and who cares about the rest? That's, you know, but I didn't know that. I thought I was running for election. I thought everybody had to love me because if anyone didn't, my life was over.
It used to keep me up at night. If I used to, If I thought, someone doesn't like me, it used to, I'd track them down and go, why? Why don't you like me? But like you say, now you're a bit older, you kind of go, oh yeah, doesn't not like that. Everyone's going to like you.
Shouldn't.
No.
Because if you think, that's like saying that everyone you date is going to be a success. No, it's like, this is all about chemistry. But the pleaser, the child that's the pleaser, the child that doesn't think, and we are basically all children, our bodies just grow fast and that's all there is to it. But inside, we're just little children.
Yeah.
And most of us usually stop evolving at some point in our lives when something bad has happened or something strange has happened, unless you have a great, like I said, like this friend of mine. But I think if you're a pleaser, as I used to be, then to not win someone's love, as you said, it can destroy you.
Yeah.
Keeps you up at night.
Yeah.
Destroys you.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's only been in the last few years when I've realised that. I used to be terrible. I remember before I was a comedian, and I was a manager of a comedy club, and the guy that owned it, he went, mate, he goes, you're too nice. You're too busy worrying about what people think of you. He goes, you're a terrible manager, because you're trying to be everyone's mate. I couldn't help it. I needed everyone to like me.
Yeah, but and I think that is why. That's why people don't end up usually with managers who are, and that's the truth, nice people. Let's be honest, nice people. They might be privately, but you can't be a nice manager.
No.
You can't be a nice agent. Let's be honest, Rich. No. You just can't be a nice agent. Let's be honest. But ultimately, you have to be a bit of a shark, because it's an ugly, dirty business.
Yes, it is.
And nice people just get shat on. And I mean, you've opened up my fabulous vocabulary now. And I know that I can swear, because I'm a real blinding swearer. I'm terrible. I'm filthy. And I enjoy it. But isn't it extraordinary how much time we waste? And I say waste because I don't really mean waste, because that's what growing and becoming wise is. But damn it, I wish I'd known.
Same.
These simple things keep you up at night stuff that is the source of so much. But listen to this. I thought I was, you think you're the only one, it's like I'm doing a show, tell me you've seen this one. Everybody's having a good time, everyone's enjoying themselves, and there's one person in the audience that looks like there's a piece of shit on the floor in front of them. Okay. And
every time.
And it's insufferable, because it's your insides are dying, because you can't win them over. You can't. It's not working. So the 99% doesn't matter. No. And then I heard this great, quite by chance, interview years ago with Phil Collins, and he said the same thing. He said, I could be playing to like a 15,000 arena, but there's a guy in the second row that I'm looking down at, and he's basically got a scowl on his face, so he's looking at his phone, and the whole gig is ruined for me.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I had this conversation with my wife last week. We did a gig together. She's a comedian as well. And we came off, she went, there was a couple just sat off to the left. They were just scowling and staring at me. And oh my God, I went, yeah, but I was stood at the back and I could hear everything and it sounded amazing. You sound like you had a brilliant gig. And she went, I hated it. I fucking hated it. Just because of that one couple.
Just because of that one bastard couple.
Yeah.
And it's and you can't, you can't be a performer without, obviously, without absorbing that. How could you? You're a human being. But here comes the other bit of a trick that I've realised. It's not even a trick.
Okay.
But I've been like you are, you get up and you bare your soul. You're a comedian, but you're still you. You're Rich Wilson on stage. That's who you are, even though you're a heightened you.
Yes.
But as a performer, I get behind the piano and I'm a heightened me, and I'm a, I'm a badass at the piano, and I'm blah, 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 all those other things. And I'm, all the stuff that makes me a seemingly the most confident person in the world. Nothing has ever made me care less about what the audience are doing than getting on stage in this new, with my New Orleans band, The Gentlemen Callers. That's another story altogether, but fabulous, incredible musicians. Nothing has empowered me more than me getting out from the piano and actually being front and center, embodying these women, this era, having a costume and a persona that I lose myself in, but it's still me. Yeah. It's me. But I have a little bit of padding. I have a bit of armor that means that it's not just me just going, look, here's my heart. Jump on it. Stamp on it, would you? So it just, you know, so now I've realized, and I just did a show here in LA, and, you know, there were a couple of people in the audience who actually were enjoying themselves. They just had the look of, you know, of LA, but you can't tell. Right, you can't tell in LA because there's been so much face work. Who knows what's going on behind there? So it basically, in days of yore, I would have gone, oh, no, they hate me. I am, no. With this one, I was like, I don't give a fuck. No. If you're not enjoying this, what is your problem?
Yes, he's on
what
you.
Is your problem? You know, there's plenty of them. Leave. Go. You're making me, you know, you're ruining it for the rest of the room. Get out.
You're bringing us down, man. Go on, get out.
So now I found myself actually pointing it. Can you believe this? So now I'm singing these songs that are so rude, full of double entendre and innuendo. Yeah. You know, if you're not enjoying yourself, you shouldn't be in that audience. And I'm pointing at this couple, really, like, doing it. And guess what? They lose their inhibitions because actually all it is they're self-conscious. Yeah. They don't quite know what to do because really what it turns out, they come up to me afterwards and say, we just wanted to get up and dance, but we felt like we couldn't. And and we were just so in shock and loving it all, but we didn't know if it was. And it was like, okay.
Oh, yeah.
So what I saw and read was so different.
Yeah.
So different from the reality.
Yeah.
And I think that in all our lives, is when we sometimes misread a situation so badly.
Yes.
Oh, God, 2 days ago, you'll love this one. I'm in a bit of a punchy mood because I've had a really tricky, like, business call.
This is all about you. This is all
darling,
about you.
Oh, no, it's terrible. And I'm feeling, it's just feeling just a little bit like, oh, a little sore, you know, as we all do when we've been in a situation of confrontation, we don't feel okay. And I'm walking the Labradors. Walking them and off we go, and I'm walking next to this little wall and I can see a man and he's walking towards us and he stops right in front of us and I'm like, and this is Santa Monica, so you got to understand there's so many strange, shall we say,
okay,
and so many right now simply dangerous people who are out on the streets just because nobody takes care of the homeless here. Nobody has a, you know, they could
give a crap,
basically. It's a bad situation and it's awful. But so I do what I always do, which is I kind of just look down at the floor and I avoid eye contact. And I'm like, he's going to move. It's as if he wants to, he's been walking again along the wall. We've been walking against the wall. And now he obviously has got a problem. He can't leave the wall. And I'm standing there and my dogs are sniffing and I can't move them. And finally, I'm thinking, oh, good grief. This is just horrendous. And I look up and he looks at me and says, can I say hello to your dogs? And it's a perfectly nice human being who just wanted to connect and loves my Labradors and wasn't being weird. And that's what I mean. That's what I mean. Yeah. I went out with a certain mindset and I'm ready. I'm ready for confrontation now because there's so much weirdness out.
Of course.
And here's a really nice person who's like, I'm just saying.
Love the dogs. Just love the dogs.
Just love the bloody dogs. So it's anyway, that's an aside, but my point being, it's what so much, don't you think so much of what we see is what we're already telling ourselves?
Yeah.
And what we're already thinking about ourselves.
Yeah. Every single time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's only been recently when I've really been looking into why I've behaved certain ways and why I've let certain things get to me over the years years ago I was with a partner. She was quite a lot older than me, a fantastic, incredible woman called Marilyn. And I remember she said that thing. She said to me, you are enough. And I didn't get it at the time. I didn't get it. I went, what? Didn't get it. But it's only now I go, yeah, you are. You are enough. Yeah, everything about you, it was just, now I look back, I wish I could ring her and go, yeah, I get it now, but we fell out. But,
and that's a fine example of, you can only hear it when you're ready to hear it.
Yeah.
And it's the same thing as you can only be well when you're ready to be well or want to be well. You can only hear stuff when you are ready and can absorb it. And that's why I want to, I'm on a mission to share this with as many people as humanly possible, but certainly with young women, because that's what I now get are all these young women after shows who, and on socials, and it's been extraordinary, who now reach out to me asking pretty much the same question, which is, I want to be as confident as you, and I don't know how, and it makes me almost want to cry, because they're looking at me like a role model, which is the greatest thing that you can be to any young generation, especially of young women.
Absolutely.
Who, if you were as lost as I was and felt as lacking as I did, to be able to help them in any way. That doesn't mean they can absorb it. That doesn't mean they can hear it, but to share with them the fact that actually I was exactly like them and really didn't get that point of being enough, and of how sexy, and this is for men and women, how sexy confidence is.
Oh God, yeah.
And again, I mean true confidence, not blasé bullshit.
No.
I mean natural, beautiful, feeling absolutely good in your own skin and your own body. Yeah. It's a wonderful, wonderful thing, and it's really sexy.
Absolutely, yeah.
And it's what we all want. We all want to walk into a room and just look like we're at ease with every situation that we're thrown into, and that that's what we all aspire to. It's what I always looked at in other women and just went, oh my God, that's what I want.
Yeah.
And I want to ask you this question, because I feel very strongly that at 6 years old, in spite of my family situation, but at six, I know that I was pretty much the person I am today. I came in really well formed and just my personality was there, my love of music was there, my joy was there,
same,
my desire to wear men's suits and a tie and look like this. I'm serious, this was all already there. It was extraordinary. And I'm already at the piano playing away, the love affair had already begun. And then it seems to me that I spent the rest of my life trying to get back to the person I was at 6 years old, but now with the wisdom that experience has brought me. And do you have that?
I have exactly the same
feeling.
I've spent my life being weirdly, have a weird self-belief, but also incredibly, and being incredibly insecure. It's a really weird path that I've walked, where I knew that I was like, again, I knew I was like, oh yeah, I've got it. I like the things I'm into, the things I like music especially.
Yeah.
But weirdly, as I grew up, maybe it was because I always had people telling me that I was shit, or I was this, or I was that, and I let it come in. But really, fundamentally underneath, I was like, no, I know I'm all right. I've actually got it going on. I know, and not in a big-headed way. I'm kind of like, no, I know. Like I get people saying to me all the time, I go, Rich, you've got it going on, mate. You switched on. I'm like, do you have any idea how hard it is for me to walk into a room sometimes and just say hello to everyone? And do you know what I mean? So yeah, I did have it when I was a kid. I was always running around. I was always dressing up. Music. I can't remember a time when I didn't have music around. I was very lucky with my parents being into the blues and the Stones, and explaining to me who these different people were. Explaining to me who Brian Jones was, and growing up, who was Bob Dylan. But then Dad saying, oh yeah, but Bob Dylan was inspired by this person, Woody Guthrie, and then going all the way back.
Yeah,
and then seeing people like Sister Rosetta Tharpe and people like that.
Yeah,
that not only they were not only strong, they were strong in a time when women weren't allowed to be, and especially when there was segregation as well, And these people fought through all that to get to still do the thing that I can't really explain myself properly, but the strength that they had to go through all that to yes. become where they were. And I know I had that in me. I know that I've now finally got to the point where like, I wear what I want. I listen to the music I want. I'm not afraid to say things because I know I have an understanding of who I am, which is what I was when I was 6 years old.
And that was exactly it. And I feel like this is so pertinent to so many people. Probably the majority of people is that their clearest, cleanest, if you know what I mean, purest, most authentic self was right there when they, because we come in pretty well formed.
Yeah.
And then we grow up and we go off the tracks and we get lost and we get, and like you, I've been told, I'm not funny, I'm not this, I'm not that, what do I think I'm doing, why are you so loud, why
stop
are you there,
off.
There.
Yeah.
All the bollocks that you always get told by people in the business. But my backbone is so strong because inside, where my little Bunsen burner lives, my little pilot light keeps very strong. I'm sure that that's shit and they're wrong. There is something as again, like you, as lacking in self-confidence and how self-loathing I've been so much of my life and how much that depression has fed that and anxiety-based depression.
Yeah.
It's still down deep. There's such a belief, self-belief, and such a backbone that will not let people destroy me.
Yeah.
Will not let them take me down. And that is something really extraordinary. And I hear it in you and I get it because you think with some people, I'm sure that you have enough of that and you just give up. You don't do it anymore. You go away. You change your life.
Yeah.
You won't do it because it's too feckin' hard, quite frankly,
yeah.
to deal with your own inside voice, your own voice in your head telling you your shit and then the others on top. You need that backbone to actually survive in the entertainment business, in any place where you put yourself out in that way, for that matter. But the thing that I so relate to, I mean, or rather what I'm literally doing by singing, you talk about Rosetta Tharpe, it's so extraordinary.
Yeah.
And what I love about what I loved about making this record, what I love about performing, which I'm, touring with it, doing it, performing, telling the stories of these women within the show, because that's what's so important, is to shine the light on these women, as you say, who were not just marginalized for being female, they were marginalized for being African-American, they were they were at the bottom of the ladder, for feck's sake.
Yeah.
But also, they were the leaders. They were band leaders. They were in charge. They were in control. They were doing it on their terms. Doesn't matter what else was going on. They were in charge. The reason my band are called the Gentlemen Callers is because it's like, Julia Lee and her boyfriends, Nelly Lutcher and The Rhythm. It's like the band. They were the guys that the women were in charge and on top. And I really relate so, I mean, not just relate, this is absolutely the surprise of all of this is this is 70 years old. This music is 70 years, some of it, and older. And it's as vital and relevant and joyful and as sexy as it was. I mean, it was risque at the time. It was really shocking at the time.
Yeah.
But it's as relevant today as it was then, perhaps even more so because today, so much female empowerment is seen as being just like being a stripper or a pole dancer. And it's like, okay, that's one way of doing it.
Yeah.
If that's what you want to do and you think, and for you, that's owning your sexuality. Well, there is another way to be a sexual being as well. And that's by keeping it on and just being fabulously sexual person by having that mystery and that sense of what lies beneath. For me, that's always been the sexiest stuff there is.
Yeah,
but
I couldn't agree more.
There are, you have to, for young women particularly, I want to send that out, which is You don't have to be basically stripping off to be sexy. You can be, and that's wonderful if you own it. And if you absolutely, you know, are that's your thing. But there are so many ways to be absolutely the woman in control,
yeah.
The person who, you know, the sexual being on stage or in life, you know, walking into any room and just looking incredibly put together.
Yeah.
I think maybe living in New Orleans has got a lot to do with this, Rich, actually.
Oh, really?
And I think you would relate to this. You know, the dressing up, which I've always been doing, which you've always been doing since you were a kid. In New Orleans, they encourage dressing up because everything is about Mardi Gras. It's about parading. You parade throughout the year in different forms. Of course, Mardi Gras is out of control. I dress up in different costumes every day, in different wigs every day. I have a wig collection that would embarrass most drag queens. It's so good. I have a hat collection, which is like out of control. Every year, it's like, what costume is this year? You know, it's like you're serious about it. And you're encouraged to put your drab, I'm bored with myself self, like to put it to the side and to like be liberated, to dress up, to fancy dress, to put on a costume, to lose yourself to find yourself by losing yourself, by experimenting, as we all do when we're children, by the way,
exactly.
In fancy dress boxes, and we're allowed to put on the cowboy gear, and I'm a prince, and I'm a princess, or whatever your gender you might be, it doesn't matter. That's what you know life is about when you're a kid, is living in that make-believe, but it's not really make-believe, it's how you learn to be yourself, it's how you find yourself. Well, that doesn't stop when you're seemingly an adult. I believe that the more we can do that reconnects us with our true child, young self, which, as I said, is still in there, for
still
God's
there.
Sake.
Yeah.
Otherwise, we wouldn't be this fucked up. I believe that anything you can do that really, you know, keeps you in touch with that person is healthy for you.
Yes.
And that means that, you know, the drab drudgery of the everyday existence, which we all feel. I don't care what you do.
Yeah.
You know, I don't live on stage. I don't live in the studio. I'm just, you know, I'm picking up my dog poo and doing my washing like everybody else. The drabness and the drabness that we feel about ourselves, there are things that you can do that alleviate that. Now, if you live in New Orleans, you have a great excuse. It's harder when you're living in London or any other place where, again, you don't get to do that. Which is why I believe there should be fancy dress clubs. I now decided that there should be fancy dress clubs, which are not naughty nuns and vicars.
No.
That's bullshit. This should be really incredibly creative, wildly imaginative costumes. It's a costume party that we should throw for each other, it's a costume party club. Come on, people, say you're with me on this one, because when I'm in New Orleans, if I'm rocking a great blue wig going down the street or a hat that like scream, I've got hats that are so big they have their own, you know, postal code. So I think that it's a joy to liberate yourself because along with doing that comes a phenomenal sense of self and confidence that if you think of yourself as a kid, you'll remember that feeling.
How good
you felt.
Absolutely.
How good you felt. I am so tired of people like wearing camping gear. I mean, the last time I was in the Palladium, I went to see Rob Brydon.
Yeah.
Like a couple of years ago in the Palladium, and everybody looked like they were literally going on a hike.
It's the fashion at the minute. And even, Normcore.
Oh my God. And even he commented on it. And I was so I was so obscenely overdressed. I had the whole, I was suited up like a behemoth. And I was just like, he made a joke about it because it was like, come on.
Yeah.
Do you understand, people, that, or maybe that's the point, is none of us, we've forgotten how good it feels to dress up, to really make an effort,
especially when you go
to
somewhere
put
like
on the glad rags. Thank you. The Palladium!
Yeah.
To put your glad rags on, to make the effort, to really make a statement be bold. It's what that is what confidence is.
It's get it all the time.
Really, yeah. Feeling that pride. And the effect it has upon your psyche, upon your mental health, is huge.
Oh, man.
Huge.
Yeah.
Because you, you know, that's a hat, incredible. You wear a hat, the hat shouldn't wear you.
Yeah.
You don't apologise for wearing a hat, you've got to
so
commit.
So many people feel threatened when you wear a hat. Not just
I know
the
they way, do.
Not just truck it, but I've got other hats, I've got all these other things, and they go, oh, look at you with your hat. You're like, what? Just,
well, we're dreadful for that in Britain as well. We know that, you know, we know that. It's the tall poppy syndrome. It's like, yeah. You know, what they're really saying is, I feel self-conscious wearing a hat. I can't carry that off, but yeah. You're wearing a hat. Damn you.
How dare you?
You feel bad now for my insecurity. That's all that is projection.
Said, oh, man. I've said it before on here. I said it in when I posted on Instagram and things like that. And I get men. I've had men come up to me at gigs afterwards, and I'll have like a pink sweatshirt on. And they'll go, mate, I like that colour. I wish I could wear that. And you're like, yeah, you can wear this. But they're so worried about what their peers are going to say or their family.
That's exactly it.
And they're like, oh yeah, I can't wear pink. You're like, yes, you can, because I'm sick and tired of seeing men wearing navy blue and black or burgundy if they're feeling particularly brave. You're like, stick some pink on, mate. Bit of yellow, orange.
Yes,
go for
and,
it.
And by the way, men, you don't have to be gay to be able to rock some fantastic stuff. Look at your wonderful shirt right
Thank
now.
You.
It's like, wear some fucking colour, would
stick
you?
Stick some colours on, mate.
But that again, you see, it's like, it's what people will think. It's yes. How will they judge me? Will they think I'm, because I'll stand out. Well, guess what? It's really good to stand out in the best. I don't mean for the sake of it, being an arse, but we don't mind standing out when we're drunk and we're a bunch of yobs screaming at each other, like beating the crap out of each other. We're fine with that.
Yeah.
Well, how about standing out for just, you know, looking great.
Yeah.
For making the effort, for really cutting it. I mean, I just, yeah. I feel like, you know, that was when you're talking about the Stones and stuff like that and London in the 60s, that's what was amazing was the fashion, the rock and roll, the music and the fashion that blended. We've always done that in Britain. We've always taken pride in how we've really married that fashion taste with music. Something has absolutely gone awry now where it's the only fashion there really is like I said, either you look like you're like a stripper or you're pimping something. And it's like, no, for everyone else, that's fine. That's the look. That's great. That's what you want to do. That's fantastic. But what about everybody else who's wearing black or navy or camping gear? It's not good enough. I had this, I really wanted people to like, I encourage people, like when I do the you know, the album, this album, come on and get it, right? It's literally like doing that, come on and get it. That was why I chose that title. It's a song, but it's like, come on.
Yeah, that's it,
And I wanted people, because I'm rocking a suit, I'm always in that androgynous place, which to me is, very, so I always found like the Marlene Dietrich look, Catherine Hepburn look, because I'm a film buff.
Yeah.
I think it's amazing.
Yeah.
So it's like the fabulous red hair and everything. And I say to people, wear a hat, wear a suit, wear anything, wear something, dress up. Because, you know, you're going to, it's not just about me on stage. I'm like taking you into another time. I'm taking you back to this period. For a reason, and it's not just about me on stage. You're invited to the party. This is, you know, imagine you're going to see Sound of Music and you're dressing up as Maria or a nun. Let's just do that. You know, just do what they do in the, you know, in the cinema with Rocky Horror or something. You know, dress, and enjoy the very act of costuming.
Yeah.
Because it's brilliant.
Really,
or come and visit New Orleans, you know what I mean? Do that. Maybe do that. I was just going to say, but I, you know, I'm a Brit who has definitely had, you know, the cork taken out of my uptight, you know where, because I've spent enough time in a place that's gone, what? You know, I walked down the road in New Orleans with a hat. You'd walk down with that shirt and people would go, I get the yeah, baby. That's what I get. Love your hat.
There's that quote.
And
isn't
if
it?
I see some, you see, would you ever do that in London? I see people in the street and I say to them, That is a beautiful, I love your hair, or I love your suit.
You smell nice.
Beautiful. You smell nice. God, you smell good.
Yeah.
Nobody flinches. People are like, thank you. You know.
Yeah.
They get that this is, that you've done something that has deserves their, not just admiration, but they want to let you know that they appreciate you. Now that is so not Northern Europe.
That's not what we do.
No, we like to do that to anybody. We like to cut down anybody that is a little bit, you know.
Yeah, and it depends where you are as well. You have to be in a certain place if you're going to turn around and go, mate, that is a great shirt, or that is a great hat. I'm always picking up people on their shoes. I'm like, mate, that is a banging pair of shoes. Where'd you get them? But you couldn't do that.
Yeah.
You couldn't do that in like the countryside somewhere. You know?
Don't do that in the countryside. I would say to you, and by the way, I won't be doing that outside of New Orleans in Louisiana, where, let's be honest, I will not be going anytime soon at all.
No.
Because we are talking about, we're talking about as Republican as you get.
Yeah.
So
that's the thing,
you can't.
Yeah.
And that's the point, is like you can do this in major cities. We all know that.
Mm.
And that includes, I think that includes Britain. I think that includes most places.
Yes.
You know, people are more shut down and isolated when you move into smaller areas. And that's fine. That's absolutely fine. And as it should be. But we go to cities to be cosmopolitan and to be worldly and to be open.
Yeah.
That's why people go to cities, I think, in the most part, of course.
Because they want free, Well,
they want freedom.
Yeah. But it's funny, we talk about freedom and being a woman, especially in America now, it seems to be that men again are rising up and taking away. Well, they're just telling women what they can and can't do with their bodies and what they can and can't. It's like men seem to have had this fear of women since forever. And it's like, why? They're always trying to put women in their place, shut them down. You're not allowed to do this, you're not allowed to do that.
It's extraordinary.
What are you scared of?
And it's I can tell you exactly what they're scared of, and it's just infuriating. But it's the reason why I'm even more proud of going out there and performing. Having released this album, having released an album that is being so beloved, and
it's a fantastic album. Not just
it's extraordinary. Thank
it's
you.
Yeah.
But also, you know, but the message it's sending, and that those women who 70 years ago were fighting the good fight and doing that, you know, in the face of, no, I'm sorry, you can't. And yes, you're a novelty, aren't you?
Yeah.
And that's it, really, but now the men are coming, so just stand aside. So, and don't get me wrong, I am surrounded by the most incredible men, and I have always been surrounded by, because this is a mostly male industry that I'm in, and I have the most respectful, remarkable, joyful men in my life. And that's who I choose, but that's mostly who I find as our musicians, and that's really it. But luckily, as I said, it's sort of like probably because I demand it.
Mm.
you're not gonna really get past me. You know, it's not gonna happen. You're not gonna get away with much shit with me. But here we are again, 70 years later.
Yeah.
70 years, and this music again, it means even more. Is even more pertinent because it's talking about. It's talking about female sexuality. These women were enjoying their female power, their sexuality. They were celebrating it. And back then, nice women, nice girls were singing about romance. But these women weren't. They were getting down and dirty, but enjoying flirting with you.
They were
making you laugh. They knew. And that's why I love them too. You know, Nellie Lutch, all these women, they struggled. And Peggy Lee, good God, you know, the huge star, white, of course. She was banned from the Southern states for sounding too black. They were convinced she must have had some black blood in her, so they banned her music. So, you know, this is what I mean. This is what America is, okay?
Yeah.
So this is, you know, this has been going on forever. But these women led with their sexuality and were beloved. and struggled. Now here we are 70 years later and women are being put back in the corner.
Yes.
And it's like a return to the 50s. This is extraordinary. And being told that they do not have any rights over their own bodies. Yeah. I'm living in this country. I'm seeing this going on. I'm out there singing songs which say, nah, actually, we're very much in tune with and enjoying our sexuality. Yeah, Thank you very much. And it's the reason that men like this have always been afraid is because, God forbid, that you would have women who are basically the reasons we're all here. So that's the greatest power you can have in life. You are the creator. We know that.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't do it without men, obviously. So you have to have both. But ultimately, I think the insecurity factor, and it's been going forever, as you say. You can see it in the Bible. You see it everywhere. It's basically that it's a man-made thing where rather than glorying and enjoying women's prowess and seeing them for these extraordinary creatures they are, who thank God are responsible for you know, our being. Rather than doing that, the insecurity of certain people, of certain men, means that they have to smash that down, just like the person who might hate you or say, the hat, mate, the hat. That's exactly the same thing.
Yeah.
That's exactly the same mentality, which is
yeah,
undermine what you are threatened by. Now, why you would be threatened, God only knows, but maybe that's the point. You notice that all the people who are threatened by female strength and sexuality are the radical right-winger holy rollers.
Yes.
And if you ask me personally, these people have as much to do with Christianity as either of my Labradors.
Yeah, true.
So
yeah,
true. There is no kindness, there is no Christian feeling towards others. All they care about, and this is what is truly sickening, all they care about is the rights of the unborn. Once you're born, they could give a fuck.
No.
And that's what happens. So you can see it by all the people who are out on the street around me right now, living on the street.
Yeah.
The homeless, the uncared for, the unloved, everybody that's in the hood, all the young black kids who are killing each other off constantly because that's all they have is drugs and guns. They don't give a crap about you when you're born. That's it then. Off their hands.
Yeah.
So life is only important when it's inside a woman.
Like you say, it's that power, isn't it? Yeah.
That's the threat, is that somehow these men are so threatened that they have to have control even over the most powerful thing that a woman has. I mean, you know, physically.
But like you say, it's the ultimate
to birth
power.
A human being. It's the ultimate in creation. It is creation.
Yeah.
So I think that is ultimately where it all stems from. And it is the women that support, you know, the right-wing Christian fundamentalist women that support the subjugation of women and of their sexual and physical rights, I find the most egregious.
Oh, God,
because the men, I understand where it's coming from. I hate it and it's wrong, but I know where it's coming from. Women?
Yeah.
Is another thing that I think is sorely lacking, and that I feel that I am a representative of, because I'm so sick and tired of women being each other's worst enemies and not supporting each other. I think there's a change, there's a shift in women wanting to support each other and wanting to be, a conjoined front and to share in each other's victories and each other's strengths and losses, because we've been thrown crumbs for so long as if there's only so much to go round and we're all fighting for it and competing for it. And it's not the truth.
No.
It's just not the truth. And the other thing that I can't bear, and it all comes, it's the same bloody thing, is this. You know, I'm a grown-up woman, and I'm sending out the message that I'm in charge of my sexuality. It's mine.
Yeah.
I'm proud of it. And also, you don't get to disappear and become irrelevant and turn to dust and stop being sexy when you pass 40. Can we just put that one on the fucking shelf, please? Can we just get past this ridiculous myth? Because everything is about chipping away at women's sense of self and in their beauty, in their core strength. And I think all it is fear of the female strength and creativity. And men don't have to do that.
No.
Most men don't. Because most men want, I believe, if you're brought up by a great mother, goes back to that again, if you have the right role models, what we all want is a great partner, a great woman, a great man, a great everything in between. You just want somebody who is healthy in their mind, in their heart, in their spirit, and again, confidence and that quiet, beautiful strength is a fabulous thing, and that's what we should be trying to attain. So I think that the centuries old undermining of women is purely down to the threat of them being the creator, you know, them being quite simply mothers.
Yeah.
About that, they're having the ultimate say. Yeah. And so, God damn it, stop that before they run away with it. Before they just lose, you know, before they get too full of themselves or wear a hat. Thank you, Rich.
It's true. There is nothing better than a strong, powerful, not powerful, you know what I mean, confident woman that fucking puts you in your place when you need it. You need it. Everything I've learned has been from the women that have been in my life. Everyone, like, with guys, it's kind of like, that guy's pissed me off. And then your mates will go, smack him in the teeth. Whereas a woman will go, hang on a minute. Women have a more subtle approach to things without being a blunt instrument. And that's why I've just learned so much from the women in my life. And there's nothing better than a strong, powerful woman.
It really is, you know, it's just like fathers have to be the best role models for their daughters and their sons. Of course they do. And that's a shift in the mentality, as you say. It's like, you know, he upset me, hit him. That's not the only way. Please, don't make that the only way. Let's not all go feral.
Yeah.
But a great mother, a loving, strong mother is so important for men and women.
Yeah.
It's all, your parents are going to be your future relationships with same and opposite sex. That's it. And everything in between, again, it's just like they are how you know. They are how you learn.
Yeah.
And we're only as good as the tools we get. You know, I never had kids because I didn't ever want to go through. I didn't want to be that parent because I know that until now I couldn't have been any kind of a parent. All I would have done would have been continue the bloody cycle, whereas I just wanted to be well myself. You know, I didn't want to be a flawed parent. No. We're all flawed, but you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Seriously flawed. I don't want what I saw with my mother happen to a child of mine, and I have never ever regretted that, never. So I'm kind of exactly what the holy roller right wingers hate. I'm sure I embody everything that they find threatening. I kind of am, and I'm smart and I'm outspoken, and I think my dad, who was such a role model for me, both as a musician, but as somebody who showed me that that it was okay to have your music, your art, be the love of your life.
Yeah.
And I ended up being with somebody, with Fabulous Harry, who's art is the love of his life. And I'm not threatened by that. I it's the right thing.
Yeah,
you it seem should to lift be the love of
up.
Your life.
Yeah.
Yeah. But try doing that with most people, where I think most people would be with someone who and be terribly threatened again.
Yeah.
Terribly threatened by being with somebody who they always knew this thing came first. It comes first.
Yeah.
And should always come first. But my father told me the smartest thing, and it relates to men and women, but of course, as a woman, it meant the most. I mean, he brought my sister and I up like we were boys anyway, because I wanted to be a boy. I'm such a tomboy. So, you know, so that's the beginning of it all. But he said, lead with your talent and your intelligence, and if you've got looks, that's great too.
Mm, wow. Wow.
It's, but yeah. I think that's the point, is lead with your talent, your intelligence, and if you're good looking, that's just a plus.
Yeah.
You know? But don't get that the wrong way around, because you will come a cropper unless you're a model, and in that which case, who cares? But you know what I mean? It's just sort of like, that was the mantra in my home, and I think that stuck with me, I believe, because it's an important thing, and I think anybody can relate to that in any field that they're in this world, because we all have talents in various ways, but it's sort of, that's also the key to confidence, I think, as well. But you know, again, we're only as good as the tools that we've got at that time. We all make huge mistakes.
Oh, I think.
I think growing up is the key to appreciating and understanding.
Yeah.
So much.
And having that. So much. Having that instilled in you at a young age by your dad, obviously, played a part in what pushed you on to keep going through all the dark times.
Oh God.
And between to support you where you are now, it's incredible.
Yes, and I now, and I'm sure you do the same thing, I can now look at my parents and see them as young people with their own insecurities and lack of confidence and self-loathing and struggles and worries, and obviously my mother's illness in addition to, but I look at them now with such empathy and compassion, because it's like, God, they didn't have anything to go on.
No.
They didn't have anything.
That's
they had no reserves, and they didn't have anything from their parents. Just get on with it. Yeah, I mean, that's what they had, was like, life's tough.
Yeah.
People die down the mines and in the steelworks. Get the fuck on with it.
This is it.
And that was, you know, that's really, that's what you're looking at.
Yeah.
And so I can only really, like, just be grateful for what came from. I bear nothing except absolute appreciations. I mean, sadness for my mother, but still appreciation, still. And especially looking at myself in the music videos that go with this, when I'm, you know, I'm dancing the whole way through, and it's just part of this persona that I have. The Lady J persona, as I've been christened by my band. But when you see me in these videos, it's my mother.
Really?
I was dumbstruck when I saw the first video to Blossoms Blues, and I realized I was looking at my mother. Yeah.
Wow. Well,
even this lipstick is my mother.
It's so,
because that's how I remember her.
That is so beautiful, and a really lovely way to finish. I don't want to finish. I want to chat to you forever. You're fantastic. And to be I'll be honest with you. Because so I always have, you know, you do when you're interviewing people, and you know, I was aware of your work, but I didn't really know you. Know you, so you're having a look, and I was intimidated. I was nervous. I was like, oh, this could go either way. She could either think I'm a fucking idiot and go, oh, what am I wasting my time for? And then, but you just went right. Here we go, and you just went bang, and I have had the best time in your company.
Oh, Rich,
thank you so
I don't
much.
Think any. Listen, you'd know if I thought was a fucking idiot. Believe me, you are so. That's the other thing, is I can't lie. You can sort of see it in my face, but I still work with it. You are so not. You're a delight. And anytime you want to invite me back, I could. I'm enjoying myself so much. I'm so glad I woke up at the crack of spit this morning to talk to you. You are a pleasure. I hope you come and see a show in London.
I would be honoured and delighted to do that.
Coming up, please come down.
I would love
to come down.
Your music is excellent. I really liked. Because my man's an undertaker, where it's like, even that, it's like, yeah, we're going to have some fun, but don't fucking tell him.
Listen,
it'll kill you.
What an incredible thing. It's like, you know what? You cross me again or come back and bother me, I'm dating an undertaker.
Yeah,
he's going to
you
out. I mean, it's just like balls on balls. You're going to love Dinah Washington. The woman was like, I got to finish with a story that you're going to absolutely bloody love. Dinah Washington doing the Royal Variety performance in front of Queen Elizabeth, okay, years ago. And the poor woman was dead at 39.
Wow.
From diet pills. Can you believe that?
Oh, my God.
Talk about the lives that are, you know, offstage terrible, amazing. But all these women led with joy, even though their lives were terrible. Their real lives were so awful. So she's there, Royal Variety performance. And she was the self-anointed queen of jazz and blues. That's what she called herself. She points up to Elizabeth and she says, to Elizabeth, there is only one heaven, there is only one God, and there is only one queen, and your Elizabeth is an imposter.
Oh, my God.
And the queen obviously went,
at the Queen's
and
own
everybody
party.
Was like nervous, coughing, dying inside, because we're talking London in the 50s.
Yeah.
There must have been like turnips passed. It was so uncomfortable. So it's just fantastic to hear that story. The balls of her.
Yeah.
But you got to love that. So,
God.
I know. But yeah, so God knows. So listen, if you're in London though, aren't you?
I am in London, yes.
All right,
Monday the 24th of July.
You've got to come down.
I'd love to. At the Jazz Cafe. Yes, I'd love to. Yeah, I'm going to come down.
Come down because you can't believe the band as well.
Really?
I mean, I'm stonking, killer woman. But listen, the band. I mean, they're all from New Orleans. This is not something you would see anywhere else. There is a certain sound, you know, that's that gritty, greasy sexuality that comes from New Orleans. And it's, again, if you close your eyes, you know these guys are smiling when they're playing, and you can't say that about a lot of jazz.
No.
And so I think I think you'll get such a...
Yeah.
You'll get such a kick out of this. And also, it's sort of... it's very liberating. The whole thing is... They're very liberating.
Yeah, I'm going to be there.
Truly.
I'm going to be there. I would love that. It'll be amazing to see you in action. Honestly,
thank you.
I could talk to you all day. You're welcome back on
anytime you want, because you are a joy. And thank you for being so indulgent with me and letting me ramble on. Truly, it's been a joy.
This is the thing about this podcast. It's not about me. It's about the guests. And there we are. You've been, honestly, I am going to be smiling for weeks. It's been fantastic.
Oh, thank you, sweetheart.
I can't wait
to meet you. I will see you in July.
That'll be lovely. Thank you so much
for
your time.
Thanks, my love. Thank you.
Soon. Take care, my love.
Yeah.
So this
Cheers.
Has been Insane in the Membrane. This has been Rich Wilson. This has been the wonderful Judith Owen. We'll see you next time.
Insane in the Membrane.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Made by darkhorsedigital.co.uk. Shooting, live streaming, and podcast production.